it's Redleaf Retrocast Anime 157. We're doing Kara no Kyokai, the Garden of Sinner movies, but only two of them. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves.
Yep.
This was Hickey's pick. Hickey, how'd you come to this decision?
Yes. Well, I mean, it is Kara no Kyokai. There isn't much you can say about it. It was the staple of a beautiful anime for, what, almost 20 years?
Sort of,
2007,
yeah.
So 15 years, or 15 years, because I watch it, well, it's a little bit, so I watch it one and two. It doesn't look as beautiful as I remember it being, but...
Is this guy in a bathroom today?
Yes.
You are?
What?
Nikki, are you in a bathroom?
No. Do I sound dead?
You sound like you're in a bathroom. A cave. A closet. Are you okay?
Weird. Yes, I am.
Okay. Maybe you just need to talk closer into it.
Hello.
Hey, there he is.
God damn.
Listen to that sultry voice from Brazil.
Oh, please. Yeah, no, it's been the staple of... For a long time, it was the best thing you could do with Japanese animation. Watching it, I still think it's a really good rule of what a modern anime could look like to be watchable. Yeah, this is a very
standards
important...
changed over the years.
it's a really important movie. It's when Ufotable really starts showing on radar again, because they're a really old anime studio. They got a decade where they didn't do anything important, and then they come swinging with anything related to Fate and the Type Moon series. You know, Tsukihime and Fate, not Stay Night, because Fate Stay Night is teen. But then, you know, you start having the unlimited money works from Ufotable. And that after, you know, also a decade, it culminates on the Japanese government investigating Ufotable and realizing they were kind of like, you know, not paying their taxes and doing some fraud. So,
look, as we know, an anime studio is no good unless they try to commit fraud on taxes.
Yeah, and invest
in
it. That's the important part. But it started technically with Garden of Sinners, you know, with the success of the animation and everything that followed the Garden of Sinners. It was weird, and when Ufotable kind of made the decision, you know what, we're going to commit some fraud so we can keep on funding good-looking anime, which is extremely important for a lot
the thing
of
is,
stuff.
The thing is, with Garden of Sinners, though, can I get a word in?
Yeah.
The thing about Garden of Sinners is that, this is kind of one of the first, real looks where people were, because the debate has been raging for a while now, and anime is anime wants to switch over to digital animation, digital only, right, away from traditional animation, and we've seen a lot of anime at this point that just they do that, but they do it really poorly. Kara no Kyokai is one of the first really good examples where they nail that digital style, digital vibers, just all of that. It was like, oh shit, it can look good.
Yeah. And this is 2007, and we've been looking at digital made anime since 1990s? No. Yeah.
Yeah, the 90s somewhere. Because Ghibli was looking into that, and then Hayao Miyazaki was like, no, fuck you. We will do digital, but not only. You also have to do traditional.
It's fully digital. It's kind of since early 2000s, there were some fully digital anime. And again, it comes back to the last episode, where it's everything is kind of uniform today, the colors and everything. Kara no Kyokai helps with that. The shadowing and the colors and how everything is rendered. comes from experiences such as Karo no Kyokai being successful and how everything, you know, digitally you don't have a lot of differences and irregularities in coloring and why not, but on the other side you have everything kind of looking the same, feeling the same. And Karo no Kyokai being the first of one of those successful digital anime, it looks different from the anime from the era. More vibrant colors and, you know, I think just taking a look at other anime from the same kind of period. I guess K-On! Is a little bit later, but Suzumiya Haruhi no Yuzu, 2006. It's so pale. Everything is extremely pale. And you look at Karo no Kyokai, they have such a, even the pale colors are so vibrant. Because this is something like that true color is something that you can achieve with digital animation and digital coloring. So it's an extremely important anime series, movie series for where we are, not where we are today, because things also changed a lot. Psy Games from 2017 onwards definitely helped changing the anime and changing color and changing animation a lot. Colors are extremely more true to the actual thing and more vibrant today than it was during Karo no Kyokai, but definitely from 2007 to 2020, like I said, 2021 is a good cutting point. Karo no Kyokai was a really impressive series, and it changed a lot of things, not only animation, but in animation culture. Again, it was important enough that a company decided to commit crimes, you know, over it, together with Unlimited Blade Works and other Ufotable series from that time. There was also the Ufotable revitalization project they started with the money from Karo no Kyokai and other digital media, where they decided to open cafes and other studios in the countryside of Japan to try and reallocate some of the Japanese population, repopulate the countryside. But that's that was like, I don't know how that is going nowadays. I think it's still going, but I'm not sure. So it is an extremely important series in many aspects, economically, politically, culturally, and, you know, for such a interesting series that dates back from 1990s Comic-E. Oh yeah, but it is important to be covered in a podcast talking about the history and all the anime like we do.
We're a retro podcast? No way.
We try to be.
So let's talk about modern football instead.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, asking me if I watched the Iceland game against, who was it?
Luxembourg. Yeah.
Well, how'd it go?
It was a great game.
Anything happen?
I think it was a tie. It was great.
Iceland let us down?
Well, I guess Luxembourg let us down. I had more expectation of a Luxembourg than Iceland.
Really? Yeah. Luxembourg?
Luxembourg has more immigrants, thus they can get good players over immigration.
You say that, but Iceland's been in tournaments. Tournaments where has Luxembourg been? I don't think they have.
I mean, again, immigration takes a while, you know? People need to fucking be born and then shit. To be Luxembourg.
Yeah, I think he was playing the long game on this. Like, in 20 years, Luxembourg, you better watch out for them.
That's what happened to France. France fucking sucked dick for 30 years. And then like, oh, yes, by the way, this totally French guy with this totally French last name is our national talent right now.
I think it took as long as you're saying it did. Because didn't they win in like 98 and then they won again less than 20 years later?
Yes, but 20 yeah. again. But like, how old was Mbappé when he won the World Cup?
Yeah, but they won before Mbappe.
No, they wanted niceness, dude.
Yeah, if anything, the country we need to look at for immigration policies is Italy. They're the ones that have sucked croc for a while since they because won.
Goddamn, are they Australian?
I was saying like crap and cock at the same time, but now it's
Brazilian
croc.
Talents. And then Brazil just like, aha, no you. And they just go to the Brazilian national team. They don't want to play on the Italy's team.
Yeah, I can understand not wanting to play for Italy. Ah, terrible country, that Italy. So terrible that obviously no one wants to go there or ever visit. Milan? Psh, unfashionable. Anyways.
Listen, man. Milan put Giroud in goal. That's all I need to know. And he kept a clean sheet.
Oh, well.
The man's a legend. French national hero and the greatest goalkeeper of all time. Has kept a clean sheet in 100% of his appearances as a goalkeeper. Suck on that.
Better than the record I have.
I've never playing in goal.
Well, you know, I've tried once or twice. Yeah, I get scored on. I'm not as good.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really hard when you're not that tall.
Yeah, you just shoot over me. It's weird. It's weird how that works. All right. Well, I guess carrying on from our last podcast, I was talking about Lies of P. And considering I went into a pretty long conversation over on the Retro Gaming Podcast, which came out last week, I played last night, and I finally beat it. Took 4 hours to beat the final boss.
Nice.
Yeah. I had to do a little grinding, a little learning a specific block. I kind of had to change even the weapon I used throughout the whole game. It really forced me to play a different way than I played the entire game in different bosses. It was like, nope, I'm going to have to play now this way. So I didn't really care for the final boss in the game, but I did do a funny little, I guess, troll ending throughout two of the last three final bosses, and they're kind of the hardest ones in the game, was there's a weapon called, well, like literally a shot put ball, just the steel shot put ball, and it's like, I'm on my last leg, they're about to kill me, they're coming at me, and then I just kind of throw it at them as a last resort, and it's like, oh, that was a final hit, I win. It's like the most anticlimactic thing, it's just poof, oh, they're dead, cool. So,
yes,
great game, I very much enjoyed it. Last boss, hard as shit. I liked all the aspects of lying and telling the truth. Didn't really impact how the ending went, I feel. I think it was made off of kind of one of three choices, and two of those three are made in the final like moment. So you're literally just given a choice, and that'll get you an ending. And then one of them is, I think, based off of another choice you make. And if you don't make X choice, then you have no choice. Like, it's impossible to get that ending from there. So.
I see. The illusion of choice. Got it.
Yeah, it was kind of the illusion of, like, you play the game a certain way and that ends up in an ending. That's not exactly true. It's just based off of making the right choice at this X part of the game or not. And then a yes or no question, essentially, at the end. So I was kind of disappointed in that, but currently it's my game of the year. I haven't finished Final Fantasy 16, so we'll see how that works out if I end up doing that. But yeah, Lies of P, phenomenal. Really enjoyed it. If you're into Dark Souls or Bloodborne or those types of games, then this is definitely one to recommend. There you go. Little video game talk. Football talk. What else you got? Tori, what you got?
Yes.
More football talk?
No.
Obviously, you've been watching the MLB playoffs and the start of the hockey season. I know you're just edge of your seat.
Of course I did, but then I suffer from short-term memory loss, therefore I don't remember any of it.
You know what happens. I'll remind you that the Houston Astros are their seventh straight ALCS, so go hometown team where I grew up.
I remember that now. I watched that totally.
Yeah, just pure domination. Ghost Rose. Hickey, you started the fall anime season, and Tori and I have not. So enlighten us.
I mean, there isn't much to talk about, honestly.
Perfect. Moving on.
Perfect. What a great season. I can't wait to not watch it. Now I have to remind myself what even came out this year. Actually, I got a bunch of advertisements for... Well, yes, but I got a bunch of advertisements for a couple ones.
Just that... Omomusume is still golden. Everyone should watch that.
No.
I kind of don't want to.
Yeah, I still think it's great. It's really well made.
Yeah, but that's really about it. Sticks out to me.
Under Ninja is... You know, I was expecting Under Ninja's animation to be bad, but I wasn't expecting it to be not animated.
Did we not know Dead Mount Death Play was getting a sequel?
No, we did.
We did?
Okay. No, we did.
I forgot.
Yes.
Short-term memory loss. It affects us all, Tori.
Yep. It definitely does.
Under Ninja. Oh, I remember you, Hickey, mentioning that. Is that any good? Did you watch it?
Yes, I'm watching it. It is. It is almost an animation. Yes, I guess it's
it is an involved. Almost anime.
Not anime, just animation in general.
That doesn't bode well for reviews, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd rather go and read I'm a Hero. I Am a Hero. Honestly, then watch Under Ninja, then be done with it. It's not very enticing.
We will see. We will see.
Okay. So with that, shall we just cut the shit and just get on to Kara no Kyokai, movies 1 and 2?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Play in the drop. All right, I really like that Dirty Pair drop that I have that you guys hear
same.
Each and every
big
time.
Fan.
Love it.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep.
All right, so 17 minutes in, we're making good time here. As we do, we obviously plan the exact moment when we make these transitions.
Of course.
Yes, very professional.
We have a document
operation
in front of us that has all the times and whatever, all the topics. That's why we're so in debt with everything.
Yes, absolutely. So glad you agree with this. The Garden of Sinners, movie 1, came out December 1st, 2007 by UFO Table. Movie 2 came out on December 29th, 2007. You'd be shocked to know that it was also made by Studio UFO Table. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that right.
No way.
Nobody is upset with my pronunciation of this. Different cultures, right? Of course.
Yeah, they show good enough that you commit tax fraud over there.
Studio tax fraud. That's way easier to say.
Studio tax fraud.
No, it was cafe fraud.
Ah.
It was the cafes from the fraud.
Same shit.
Which was like, I'm impressed that they ran with it for almost like, what, 6-7 years before anyone had suspicions over it, because it was the easiest fraud to commit. I was like, oh, wow, man, the Japanese authorities are super incompetent, goddamn.
All right.
Which always surprises me, how incompetent they are, but that's beyond the point.
So the Garden of Sinners, a.k.a. Kara no Kyokai, is a series of movies. There was 8 when I was watching them, now there's 11, and... Everything's made in this out-of-order sequence, a la, what is that, Harome Suzumiya? Is that the series?
Harome Suzumiya, yeah. Yes. The Melancholy of Harome Suzumiya.
Yeah, that one.
But I mean, like, yeah, this one is...
Concrete Revolution as well.
Concrete Revolution is like the half and half split off wrong, and then it goes back into being in chronological order.
Yeah, first season.
Makes no sense.
So, movie 1 in the chronological order chronological, I can say that, is number 5. And then movie 2 is the first one, I guess, technically, in the order. But they each have interesting titles to them. Garden of Sinners, Overlooking View, and then Garden of Sinners, A Study in Murder, Part 1. Okay.
Part 1. And you don't get Part 2 until movie 7.
That's right. You don't get that.
I remember when even,
it's not even the second in the chronological order.
Not even, no. But that was actually one of the funny things, because when I watched Kara no Kyokai the first time, I watched the first movie, and I was like, I'll watch the second movie tomorrow. I come and I watch the second movie tomorrow, and I realize it's a part one and part two, and that's where I got hooked. And I was like, I gotta watch the next one for part two, and then the next one isn't part two, so I gotta watch the next one for part two. That's not part two. I gotta watch the next one. I just watched all of them until I found part two.
So the I believe there's a different director for each and every movie, if I'm not mistaken, or at least the first two here. Aoki was the director of movie 1. He's storyboard, Monogatari series, Fate Zero director, those kinds of shows. I believe he was involved in... Was he involved in Recreators, the one I really really hated? I think that was that one.
Fate Zero as well. Gare Zero, Alnoa Zero, any show that has Zero in the title, right. He did.
And then movie 2 was Takuya Nanaka. Very much kind of the same vein, but more storyboard-oriented kind of guy. Yeah. Best way to put that. Both movies are very well-renowned for their incredible color schemes and animation styles and techniques, as Hickey went started this podcast on explaining. And it very much shows, because if you show someone this from 2023 and you have them guess what year it came out, I don't think they would be saying almost 2006.
Yeah, but yeah. It is starting to look very dated. It is.
It's just now getting to that point. And I think that
maybe,
more has to do with the character art rather than
the
techniques.
I guess so. Also, the animation. The animation is not very... There's a lot of still frames and weird camera angles.
I mean, to be fair, that has always been the critique of Ufotable. Ufotable was never in a studio that was great at animating. They're
probably
mostly known for their effects work.
Unlimited Blade Works was when? Because that has dynamic camera movement.
It does, but even that is mostly AI focused. It's not so much them doing it, and there they do the same thing as well. Rather than animating it, they're focusing on like adding effects to make to give off the idea of movement. It's why you often have the characters just standing still, swinging their weapon around, and it's just like colors. They aren't actually moving.
Unlimited Blade Works is 2014, so 7 years after the first movie.
All right.
But yeah, but it is starting to look at a little bit dated, but for the longest time, I believe, up to 2020, 2021, this was quoted as like what animation should strive to look like.
Right. So the first movie, Overlooking View, I have the synopsis here. So let me go through this. A series of eerily similar suicides occupy newspaper headlines in the late 90s Japan. Yes, this show takes place in the late 90s. Mostly.
Because it was created in the late 90s. The actual original series that was sold in comic, just like a lot of stuff was, is from 1998.
Ah, yes.
So almost 10 years between the first appearance of Kara no Kyokai in comic to being released as an anime, because it was bought by Kodansha after the Type Moon stuff kind of blew up. Since the Fate light novel is actually very old as well, that is like 1999, 2000s. Studio Deem Stay Night is what, 2004? And then Karano, because of the release of Fate Stay Night, then the anime Fate Stay Night, the Japanese media conglomerate kind of went like, oh shit, there's this one weird dude with his doujin circle making a whole universe. They found Kara no Kyokai, they found Tsukihime. Then you start the Tsukihime Fate Stay Night kind of universe things with games and fighting games and Kodansha Aquarium. In 2004, Kara no Kyokai then releasing the light novels official release in 2007. And then in a lot of stuff that happens a lot in Japan from like this 90s series. Nowadays it's faster. Like the discoverability of young talents and series is faster. You can see with Overlord, because that thing started as an online series that guy was writing, and it took like a year, 2 years for it to be acquired by a big media group and then released into anime.
It's almost like finding new talents and new blood with new ideas is good for all industries.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also easier now because of the internet and everybody talking. Yeah. Like, seeing, you internet. Actually get to see more. No, but you get to see more like people's reaction to stuff, right? Whereas like back here, like it was like you were basically, in order to even know that this existed, you needed to know someone who knew that fucking Nasu and the guys were doing this shit and were interested in the fucking stuff.
And then, and I was like, oh man, you know, that Fate stuff is doing really well. Do you have anything else? I was like, oh, I have like that novel I wrote in 1996 and sold in 1998 in a comic here. We sold like 100 copies of it. That is golden. And like, man, I'm buying that.
You sold 100 copies? Buy this, man.
All right. Amidst all the bizarre resemblances, there is one detail that stands out above the rest. These are the suicides, by the way. The victims have all taken their lives by leaping from the Fuju building, a rundown abandoned structure rising high above the city. Shiki, a cold-hearted girl living in an empty apartment, she should probably get some stuff, suspects that these sinister events have a supernatural cause. Possessing a mystical power herself, Shiki works to investigate the incidents alongside Toko Aozaki, a doll-making detective specializing in magic. Didn't see that coming, did you? And her friend, Miyaka Kokuto, who works as Toko's assistant. Shiki unravels the mystery as she ventures through an enigmatic world to uncover the dark secrets surrounding the strange phenomenon. I'm having a hard time, like, talking and reading today. This is tough.
Damn.
Short-term memory loss.
Yeah.
That's the theme.
Yeah, yep. Dude. You just wrote it. You just read Mikia as Mikiaka, dude. You went in on that name. Yeah.
God, I don't even realize I'm doing that. I apologize. Who is texting me? My God.
During a podcast? God damn.
Jeez. Let's mute that for
don't
a second.
Don't they know who you are?
Okay. So, the first movie is all about setting up, like, your characters, and really builds up well to the epic fight scene that involves Shiki, and right away, I knew watching the series that Shiki is going to be a character that will kind of stand out in my mind in the anime fandom, or at least my fandom. Did you guys feel the same way?
I mean, she's definitely got a certain type of appeal. I feel like it's harder to see it now because, like, this type of character is very common. The, like, cold, sort of closed-off character that doesn't really do much or talk much, just kind of, like, ventures out and sees shit, and you're like, there's something weird about this person. And then you get to that moment where her eyes change and she sees, like, the lines, and you're like,
hell yeah,
that is weird. Like, because this is obviously the fifth part. There's like nothing is explained. Characters know each other. They talk to each other. So, like, you get off on a very odd feeling starting on this movie. It's like, you can't quite place stuff at the moment. It's like, yeah, things are happening, but you're not really, you're not really up to speed. You understand that there's suicides. You understand that these people are looking into, like, what is going on. But, like, why? Who are they? Like, what's the deal here?
Yeah, it gives it a good sense.
Why do we have doll arms and magic, apparently? Right. And, like, what's going on?
But with all that, like, I know what you're saying. And I think it's, well, obviously it's by design. Why they released it like this, but when you
even the novel was released like this,
yeah, when you experience these things, it gives you an interesting sense of not dread, but definitely mystery, because it's intentionally made so you don't know enough, but you know enough in terms of like a plot in a vacuum sense, and then just this sense of uncomfortableness that you must go through as you're going through the show and series and movies. It's a very unique feeling that UFO Table tends to go to a lot, and Kara no Kyokai was my first experience with something like this.
I wonder if it was because what I don't know. I watched Fate before that, so it's not like I wasn't. You know, I didn't know about the writing and the writing style of the people from the doujin circle. Because I played Fate Stay Night, and then I watched Fate Stay Night by Deem.
I think in my fandom, I watched this before I watched any of the Fate series. Let me see. I tend to keep good track of this
Same.
Stuff.
I definitely did.
I played Fate before watching Kara no Kyokai. I watched Kara no Kyokai because of Fate. So like, I knew about the writing style and knew about how the characters would most likely and unfortunately behave, because holy shit, the dialogue is just not there, dude. It is ill-written, to say the least, but for how, like, I cannot go hard on something that was written in 1998 by a guy who was probably in high school.
Yes, true. But at the same time, you can, because I'd even go so far as to say that I don't think that's changed much though, over the course of Nasu's career. He's still not a very good writer.
Okay, no. Not I watched really. Fate Stay Night 3 years before Kara no Kyokai.
Yeah.
Okay, I did not.
It's 3 years.
Like, I'm talking about the 2004 show.
I knew about Fate Stay Night, I knew about the Limited Blade Works, and I knew about Heaven's Shield before
watching. That's another good follow-up question. Did I? No, Blade Works came out in what, 2017?
2014.
Oh my god, is that old?
And it looks really good still. It still looks extremely good. But I played the game. I played the visual novel. So I know about how the character should behave.
Oh my god, you're right. That did come out in 2014. Oh, jeez. Are we getting old?
Not only you. Are.
I am? Okay.
You are.
I also watched Blade Works before Kara no Kyokai, so poor on me for misremembering the order in which I watched these things.
Jesus. I watched Kara no Kyokai like almost 10 years ago at this point, I think, yeah?
Yeah. Same.
God.
Crazy.
But about the character, I don't know, because it's weird looking about it when I watched it and when it came out, because I didn't have enough age to really analyze and understand like the conception and everything else around Kara no Kyokai. Now I can just do that, but it would be like such a huge hindsight that I don't feel like engaging in such a thought.
Well, what was your
when
thought process?
When you're a teenager, Shiki is just cool.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think when you guys were Shiki, when I watched it, I
was in my 20s.
Like it was extremely, I think it was extremely cool. It was like a time where I was really into writing as well. And I think at least Shiki as a character is really, it's a really interesting character. When you watch both first and second movie, because for the second movie is the first one, and you know, it got revealed that she's from like this really wealthy traditional Japanese house and family, So she's always wearing the yukata, but they give her that flair with the jacket. Right? The motorcycle jacket.
Yeah, is there anything cooler than a nice short leather type jacket on a woman?
Yeah, but like it's bright red and motorcycle jacket, short motorcycle jacket. Extremely Western, but clashing with the traditional yukata.
Yeah. And the boots, second movie definitely does a lot more.
She wears boots with a yukata and not the Taisho Roman era yukata. So it also clashes a lot. So there's a bunch of clashing elements about Shiki. Of course, then you learn that Shiki is two people sharing a body, but regardless.
Yeah, there's a little identity disorder going on there. Yeah.
Well, that's like second movie stuff. Second movie does a lot more for her character than the first one. That's because, like, again, the first movie just... Based on where you technically are at in the story, you're supposed to know all these things already. You aren't, but, you know. It's like, so you don't really, that's why I was like, from the first movie, I didn't get much of her. From the second movie, you get a lot more, which makes her cooler. They're also younger but at that point. So,
visually, when you don't know a lot, you can identify and understand a lot of the Shiki personality and character by looking at her.
Yeah, you understand that there's a clash in her character. Like, there's, like, she gives off the idea of, like, even before, it, when they reveal that she is two people in one. Yeah, but, like, when they reveal that she is two people in one, right, it makes sense because you've looked at her the entire time and feel like, this feels like the style of two people.
Yeah. Even the knife, she's carrying, like, a Western-style knife, but I think the handle is... Western style, even the knife is kind of clashing around in elements.
Mm.
So her character, like, I remember looking at the character and being like, this is a really well-designed character. And she, in the Tsukihime Fate Kara no Kyokai universe, she kind of stands out a lot, especially when we go to Tsukihime Shiki, which is another can of worms. There's another Shiki from Tsukihime, which is a guy, and he's super boring. She really stands out as one of the best designs from the original, you know, Fate kind of type moon universe characters. Because then you have, like, Emi Yashiro from Fate. He's, like, the epitome of boring character design. Saber is really also... Everyone in Fate is kind of boring.
Kind of. There are some exceptions, but generally speaking, it's like Shiro looks like main character. Tosaka looks like waifu bait. Fucking a lot of the girls looks like waifu bait.
She's absolutely fucking genetically engineered waifu bait. She hits every single one of the fucking boxes.
And then there's like Ninja. Gilgamesh, fucking Gilgamesh is cool, but not so much because of his looks. Because I mean, it's like it's the kind of obvious. I was like, this guy is obviously full of himself. So let's fucking give him bright yellow hair and dress him in all gold armor. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Tsukihime is kind of the same. Everyone is kind of. Not generic, but being generic at the same time. I don't know how to like explain that. I'm not an artist, but like I know writing. I can write shit. I'm a good writer, and I can write a character. I can write the description of a character, and most of Tsukihime characters are also like follow that kind of boring aesthetic. And even in Kara no Kyokai, when you look at them. The characters are kind of like boring looking, and then you have Shiki, which is like this clash of elements, and she definitely shows like a lot of personality, especially when you look at the first movie, Overlooking View, and you see the poster for it, right? And that's like just Shiki with a knife. And it's like super awesome. And you go to the second movie and it looks like a romance.
Yeah. Like when I was first watching the show or the movies and I get to the second one, I'm like, is this the same like show? Is this from the same universe?
Like the first
one. We're in high school.
We go from 1998 back to 1995. So 3 years prior, we got high school, we got romance, and you're like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden she comes across like a dead body, puts blood on her lips, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right, we're still here, baby. I definitely like the first one more than the second one, even though the second one probably has a better story that makes more sense.
Really? That's very interesting. For me, it's the exact opposite. I don't like the first movie that much. I'm way more of a study in murder type of guy.
Really? You like the second movie more?
Yes, I do.
Look at that. We're all kind of different places on this.
No, because like the thing is, like the second
movie more than this. Because I don't like the ending of the second movie. Because it's the first chronologically, so it kind of like ends in a weird place with them like, oh, I want to kill you, but I don't want to die, and the movie just kind of ends. Like,
yeah, but that's kind of what got me into it, because that's where it's like, that's what made me want to go on and move on to the next one, be like, oh shit, what happens? The first movie has that problem where it's like, it doesn't give you anything, right? Like, sure, when you know everything and go back to it, it's like, okay, cool, but the entire story of the first one to me kind of just falls flat. Like, the whole thing with a girl is like the actual reason why everybody's committing suicide, like hospitalized girl or whatnot. It's like that entire thing kind of, when they explain that to you, it's like that entire story just completely loses me. It's like, it's not interesting. It's not well built up. It's not even particularly well written. It's just kind of meh. The fight in that first movie, I think, is kind of lame as well. I do. It's not.
I can't believe you think the high spots are lame.
No, it is. I think also.
I'm alone on this. Oh, boo.
Nah, but it's okay. Like, again, Nasser is not a kind of good writer. So the first movie.
The actual cool fight gets a lot later.
True. With better techniques as well. Those are the best too. So the animation techniques kind of improve through all the ages. It has more dialogue in the first movie, and it's more like chill dialogue, exposition, and you see that writing is not the best. So it kind of gets a little bit less points for that. Karo no Kyokai 1 is more exposition, objective exposition of something we need to address, and the characters are not really debating what is right, what is wrong, what is reality that much. So it's like, okay, there's the murder happening, we need to kind of stop it because Mikia wanted to stop it, but now he's a vegetable, so you know, you gotta go and save his ass or his soul or whatever, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, okay, I'm even going to save my not boyfriend and fight. Not a lot of exposition of I'm actually two people, and oh, I don't think you are the murderer, but I am the murderer, but I don't believe you because you are a woman, so I cannot believe a woman because you're a woman, and kind of the stuff that Nasser sometimes writes.
People die when they are killed. Nah, but I mean, I definitely agree. That's the thing, right? Because the first movie, it hits you with a lot of those, like getting a scene where fucking Shiki and Mickey are talking to each other, and it's a little bit after, it's like we fucking change scene, and it's like, yep, I can't believe they took our boy from us. Yeah, we have to try to make sure that our boy goes back. What are they talking about? He's sitting there. Oh yeah, no, he's fucked. He's gone. Like, he's here, but he's not here. It's like, oh.
Your soul got fucking snatched. Also, there's one detail that I really enjoy Toko as a character, and she's not on the, of course, she's not on the second movie.
So she's cool, but she's cooler later as well.
She is. There isn't a lot of magic on the second one. It's more down to earth, aside the personality split personality. So, the first movie has a slight edge over the first one. But I think it's not part of this, but I think that the third one is my favorite. So,
well, we're not here to talk about the third one, Hickey. Don't get ridiculous here. Let me. What did I rate that? Yeah. Let me see. Because obviously, I think it's fair to say we've all seen all eight of them at least at that point, right?
Mm. Yep.
And yeah, I did rate the third movie higher than both of these first two. So I'm kind of I'm with you, Hickey.
I'm basically changing my ratings for movies as I go now, because like I watched this movie, like I said, 10 years ago. This was way before I had a MAL. So I added, when I created my MAL, I added these later, and I didn't remember like which movies I liked the most and which one. Like I was like, I just really liked the entire thing. So when I then went in and added it, I scored everyone at an 8, just because like, that's basically where I'm at with this movie in general. So now I'm basically going back and reordering the scoring for the movies as I rewatch them now.
Rewatch. Yeah, but still very solid. You still need to remember this show was dated before it it came out. And Naso is
and yet
not,
it didn't feel like it.
Naso is not the best writer of all.
Naso is Naso.
Yeah, and if anyone's curious about like buying these things, they're fuck expensive.
Shocking.
Yeah. Although I think Aniplex, didn't they lower their prices recently, or am I remembering something terrible?
I have no idea.
Aniplex, Garden of Sinners.
Aniplex.
Yeah, if anyone's curious, they kind of own the rights to this thing. And okay,
oh,
so
really,
yeah. So you can't go to like Right Stuff or you know places that sell these things more affordable.
Yeah, Right Stuff doesn't exist anymore, GG.
What?
True.
Yeah.
Oh, what? You didn't hear about that? Okay.
What happened?
Oh, you didn't know. Sony had
it. Well, Sony. Right Stuff is now the Crunchyroll store.
Oh my god.
Well, shit, I guess we need to go back and have the new segment as we used to do.
I feel like I was just on Right Stuff. I just ordered stuff from them.
No, the store still exists. It's going to stay for a while. I don't remember until, I think, November or something.
On October 10th, oh my god, this was just a few days ago.
Yeah.
Right Stuff Anime merged with the Crunchyroll store to give our customers the most fan-first anime and manga shopping experience. I don't know about this.
Yeah, no. Definitely not. Definitely not, but hey, it's okay. Sony is not creating a monopoly. Definitely not. Not at all.
No.
Why would they do that?
Of course not. That would never happen. Oh my god. Terrible. It's terrible news. All right, I was looking up Aniplex, Garden of Sinners. Are they our only hope now?
No, but I think they're also part of conglomerate.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
Aniplex is owned by.
Okay, here we go.
Bandai.
All eight movies you can get at Aniplex in the Garden of Sinners complete disc box, and it's currently on sale. For $250.
Oh, never mind. Aniplex is owned by Sony.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I was about to say, because like anything Aniplex does is like goes hand in hand with like Sony stuff. So I'm pretty sure they are.
Sony Pictures Entertainment Visual Works and Sony yep. Entertainment Visual.
So I guess
Works
that's actually not too bad. I mean, that's comes out to $31 a movie. That's not. Outrage. That's not what it used to be. I remember when it used to be
$31 a movie.
I mean, the thing I will just slap back at you with that is that these are not full length movies. These are
short
movies.
That's true. But I generally go off in my head, a Blu-ray disc movie is anywhere from $20 to $30. You know, depending mm-hmm. on you know who's selling it and how and quality and et cetera, et cetera. So I remember. Looking at Kara no Kyokai when I was watching these, to buy them from Aniplex, I believe it was like $100-something a movie.
Yeah. Aniplex used to be very bad with that. Like, it's the same thing. People who tried to get the Fate series back in the day, like, that was like, you had to fork out so much money. Like, they were fucking strangleholding people for that for that thing. It was just not easy to get if you weren't willing to fucking spend.
Right. So, all right. So what was? Oh, okay. And then the second movie synopsis. I never did read that one, did I?
You did not.
Okay. In the winter of 1995, Mikia did it this time. Hickey, success. Passes nice. A young woman during a late night stroll in the snow, clad in a striking white kimono, and bearing an enigmatic gaze. Shiki smiles at Mikia, who stares back with curiosity. Later that spring, months later, Mikia notices Shiki at his high school entrance ceremony, and they become acquaintances through lunchtime conversations. As Shiki begins opening up to him, Mikia learns about her unique upbringing. Meanwhile, a series of unprecedented murders takes place across Mifune City, seemingly related. These murders are particularly brutal and warrant a large-scale police investigation. Well, it'd be weird if they didn't, right?
True.
All these murders in the city. Should we get an investigation? Bill, no!
Nah.
Forget it. We got coffee to go get. Because of his cousin's work as a police investigator, Mikia is given insight into the investigation. That seems like a conflict of interest, but okay. Concerned for Shiki's safety.
I love that.
What?
No, I just love that fucking scene, though, where it's just like, when they're sitting there talking, fucking oranges.
Talking about
murders. It's just like, anyways, so this, you must not tell anyone about this, because this is highly, highly confidential information. It's like, you know, you can just not tell me. I'm not that interested. It's like, no, you must hear this.
You must hear about all these murders. That's incredibly confidential. Don't tell anyone, unlike what I just did. Yeah.
I just like the idea that he's just bored and he just wants to talk about something.
Yeah.
He's like, no, fuck you. Listen to me.
Oh, my God. Concerned for Shiki's safety, Mikia decides to monitor her actions. That sounds very stalker-esque. But in doing so, he stumbles upon a truly frightening discovery that changes his life forever. Hickey, Tori, quick, what was that life altering discovery?
He saw a girl.
Sure did.
He realizes that whenever he's with Shiki, his PP that usually is used to... to take a piece gets hard.
Oh my God.
And then it gets confused because when they're together, that's usually the guy.
Oh shit.
Now he has to figure himself out. Am I gay?
Oh no. I'm following this woman in the dead of night and my dick's getting hard. But what does this mean?
What does this mean? Stay tuned for part two.
Yeah, movie three.
No.
Actually, no. Movie 7.
Not movie 3.
Was it movie 7?
Yes, it was movie 7.
Yes, it was movie 7. A Study in Murder, Part 2.
Which is the chronological order of 8 in the series.
Oh, God.
It's actually move 2. That is move 4. No, it's move 4. That is move 2. Sorry. It's getting confused.
Fuck. All right.
And then it's just exposition. And exposition with not a bright... Not a bright writing.
You know, now that you guys say it out loud, the writing in this is quite poor. I agree. Yeah.
Yep.
As Tony was saying, yeah, they're just peeling some oranges and be like, oh, by the way, look at this picture of this guy that got his intestines raped off. Really cool, right? I'm in middle school.
Even same thing when they pick up Mikia at the end and they're like, did you see anything? And he's just there like, no. Damn it, it would have been so much easier if you would have seen something. It's like, okay, we're saying that out loud. Like, yeah, I think we all know that would be easier. Like, come on. Like, what?
Could you imagine, like, in real life?
Seen who did it.
Could you imagine if a cop in real life comes to you, like, you were a block away from the murder, but you didn't say it, you didn't see anything, but you heard everything? All right, Tori.
You're bleeding.
All right, Tori, there's a lot of blood you passed. Caught. Did you see anything? Did you see the murderer? No. Well, shit. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure I didn't see anything.
No, sir, I did not see any hot women. So I did not see anything.
I did not see a very attractive woman that made my dick hard murder somebody. It's like, all right, hold off on the dick part. We're going to come back to that one, but back to the murder.
Back to the woman. What was she wearing?
What was she wearing?
Karano Kyokai.
She was showing ankles. Oh, yes.
Karano Kyokai movie 2 reminds me of the Spider-Man trilogy. When he's fighting the Green Goblin and he comes home with his photo perhaps like, oh, I fail. And Mika is the same. He gets cut in the arm by Shiki. He's like, oh my god, why are you beating up? What the heck with a knife? Knife? No, I just fell. It's like, oh, okay, let's go to the hospital. I was like, that's not how it works.
The doctor, it looks like you've been stabbed. No, I just fell.
Fell on a knife in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I fell for the woman of my life.
Or the guy of my life.
Yeah, you could, doctor, you could say I'm definitely falling on something.
It is important to notice that.
Too much information.
Out of the two Shikis, the men Shiki is the one that likes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Well,
I like you. I like you. But the female part just kind of wants to kill you. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Don't you hate it when that happens? You meet a girl with two personalities and you like them both. And then you're like, oh, man, I can date two people in one. And then one of them just wants to kill you. Like,
I can't believe I met this amazing girl, but she has split personality. And you know what's even worse? Both of her split personalities are fucking psychopaths. Can you believe that shit?
So I guess I just have to choose one of them. No, now that we're making fun of this out loud, this sounds like a weird show.
It is a weird show. That's part of the appeal of it. That's why I like it. I like it because it's weird.
Yeah,
it's type more like you saying that like you haven't seen Fate's Day Night.
You really think everyone just said randomly was like, I want to fuck historically important historically important people? Like, you think that you don't think that's weird?
We understand, like,
no, it's just me. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. Definitely just.
I just assume in this heroic spirit that is like super golden and cannot die. Let me just not let her fight because she's a woman. Like, and you see,
well, you see, you don't understand.
Amazing.
Women can't fight. They shouldn't be allowed. They need to be in the kitchen. There's a lot of misogynistic aspects that we just need to accept.
Are you not seeing?
You guys are just completely ignoring the real problem here.
What is the real problem?
Fate Remanin just released, and the main character was trained by Musashi, which was a dude, and then the dude Musashi dies, and then got fucking called as a heroic spirit as a woman with big breasts, and the guy is extremely uncomfortable the whole time.
And the real problem. Most of these heroic spirits are guys that they were like, but that's not sexy enough. Woman,
it's like, yeah, it's alternative universes and shit.
And then we need to try to explain how the fuck King Arthur, who's now a woman, can also have kids. And not as the mother of those kids.
I like how this podcast became a burial of UFO table.
UFO table? No, dude, of Type Moon.
All right.
Going by actually King Arthur lore, his sister, which was a witch, enchanted him so he could fuck her, and then Mordred from the incestuous relationship. And
magically growing a dick, I know.
The saber lore is literally that. Her sister transformed her into a man, and then the man saber, that is not the main saber, man saber from another universe, is the woman saber transformed into a man, fucked her sister.
Oh,
and then Mordred best girl, by the way, gets born out of that.
You know, yeah, I never looked into that much. Right.
That is
I just thought Arthur was a woman. Lancer. That's just what they were going with. I didn't know about the lore.
Lancer Arthuria, that is just a MILF. That also happens. Mm.
Oh, God.
That one is great. It is the best. It is the best ill-written series to walk this up.
Oh my God! Do I need to play this visual novel deal?
No, it's okay.
It's okay.
You can play Fate Stay Night the novel. It's not that bad, honestly. Yeah. It's kind of fun.
People die when they're killed. I feel that way right now.
They do die when they're killed.
But yeah, Karakuno no Kyokai kind of follows the same set of rules. If you want to understand Type Moon, Karakuno no Kyokai is definitely the best way to understand it. There's a lot of concepts that are explained on Karakuno no Kyokai deeply that are the basis for Tsukihime and the Fate series. So you can actually kind of like, I understand what it is happening on Fate now because of Karakuno no Kyokai briefly explained everything. So it's kind of like the introduction to the other series being the first, I think. Because Tsukihime is 2000s and Fate is later as well. Great series. Kind of weird.
Kind of. Oh, man. But yeah, nah. The second movie is... you'll never get away from the weird-ass dialogue, but again, I like the fact that the second movie, I don't know, Kyokai gives more, the first part, the first in the chronological order. It gives more information. It's got some nice shots, some nice scenes. It's got that awkward delivery. Where it's like, same thing as like, as much as I make fun of it, like, same thing as like the people die when they're killed. It's just like, I understand the sentiment. Same thing here when the fucking Mikiya is laying on the ground and Shiki's about, what just says that, I want to kill you. It's like, do you not see that I'm a murderer? And he's like, I don't believe you are. Like, it's like, I understand what they're going for, but it's so like poorly written that it just kind of comes off as he's being like really stupid. But it's definitely, it's a nice, it's got some nice shots. The shot of Shiki just standing there, fucking blood dripping from the fucking bamboo trees. Nice shot.
I love all the effects and the shots, and like, it gives me, as an action fan, it gives me a good, like, satisfaction in that aspect. And then the general sense of just vibe throughout the show is very enjoyable, and that's what got me to continue watching these movies.
Music, the OST is amazing. The shots,
the music for this.
All right, let's score these suckers. Hickey, why don't you do the honors since this was your pick?
Yeah, first move 8, second move 7. Before it was a 9 and an 8, but I just backed down. One though, because it's starting to look very dated, and I'm also older enough to have experience to qualify how good of a show it should be when it was released. It is still amazing, both of them. They're still the staple of a good animation, definitely. And I can, by rewatching it, say what a 2023 until even 2030s anime should strive to look in the least. If you cannot beat Karakuno no Kyokai from 10 to almost like 15, 17 years ago, you are truly a awful looking show.
I'm up for that.
Visuals, for music, for writing, for anything. I can still, and it makes me happy because I was talking about, 2-3 podcasts before, where like some shows keep being mentioned for like 10, 20 years as being like this really good show you should watch, and it gets replaced by something new. But Karano Kyokai can still keep being used as the rule, right?
I'm up for that. I'm up for watching modern shows now with the bar of Garden of Sinners. Like, if you don't reach the Garden of Sinners bar, then I'm going to rate these two shows.
Yeah. Or even like Unlimited Blade Works is 2014. Before it was like, if you cannot, like, Karano Kyokai is unattainable. Like, you cannot reach Karano Kyokai. But it's been 18 years. Now it's like, look, this is like, to be an average show, you need to look as good and have music as, not music as good as Karano Kyokai because it's movies, but that is the average show for me. Karano Kyokai looks like a average 2023 show, which is saying a lot. And is also very impressive for the modern Japanese animation industry. That is the line I can definitely put on the ground for the 2007 movies, not the 2009, 2010 movies, you know, the later movies. But those first two, I can definitely use. And it's great to keep referring in the near future to such a now very old show, as it is just, it still looks as good as an average animation today and will probably look as good as an average animation for the next 7-8 years.
I went with a 7 on both shows. And yeah, I'm going to look forward to now reviewing shows and being like, did it reach the Garden of Sinner bar? Yes, no, you're not a 7 or you're below. So there you go. And for the information, I didn't move it from when I first watched the show. Shit. Almost 10 years ago at this point. So I'm still at a 7. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. So as I suspected, the music is indeed Yuki Kajira and Calafina. Just so that's out there. And of course. Not because they do a lot of that when you football. But anyways. So for me, I enjoy both of these movies. Like I said, I originally had everyone at an 8 because that was my overall for the movies. But sure. When I watch them now, I dropped down the first movie to a 7 and I kept the second movie at an 8. I enjoy the second movie more because it gives me more than the first movie does. There are not very many standout moments in the first movie, which is like, it's good, it's enjoyable because like I've seen this before. So like, well, obviously I don't remember everything perfectly because it's been 10 years, but like I still remember enough about it. I'm like, okay, at least I know who these people are, right? But like, I could definitely, like, coming into that first movie, if you decide to watch it this way and you don't know about it being out of order, it'll definitely feel very weird. The way it's chopped up kind of is a little awkward as well, and how like some scenes flow, how it just kind of cuts from one scene to another, and you're just like, wait a minute, I feel like we just skipped a whole bunch of shit here. The second one sort of slows down the pace a little, and it gets a bit more moody and a bit more in itself, while simultaneously being like, tricking you into being like, this is yet another high school anime, but, you know, not exactly.
Not exactly.
So I like the second movie more, so yeah. 7 for the first one, 8 for the second.
So I'm looking at our list here. We haven't gone below a 5 in rating since December of last year. And we haven't gone above an 8 since October of last year. So it's been a year since we've been above an 8 on a rating.
Odd.
Maybe we can fix that with some of the shows coming up.
Maybe that will change or some shows that are cut.
I think that means we need to pick some pieces of shit.
Hey.
Oh, I mean, are you telling me that you're releasing me from my restraints?
No.
No, I'd rather not. I'd rather watch good stuff.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
We don't do one good show for the first time in over a year and then be like, nope, back to trash.
Back to trash. Only 4s or lower.
You know, just gotta remember that. What is the show?
No.
I'm pretty sure that Kodomo the Jikan is in the list.
No.
Did I delete that? I hope I did. No, I didn't. Fuck.
Delete it, Tori. Do it. All right. That's our next episode will be in a couple weeks. See you next time.
Peace.
Goodbye.